Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled.
Film.
Conversation.
Hooray!
So, I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. With me is Abigail Bain and Anthony Evans. So, guys, our film this week is The Memoirs of the Invisible Man. That's right, he had an exciting life, turned invisible, died.
Wrote about it.
Yeah, came back to life in a different form and visit. Like, lots of people have been invisible, but one of them had a memoirs, and the one that it was Chevy Chase.
Sigh.
Well, it's not that Chevy Chase is bad all the time. It's just, I just thought we should watch this one because what it was is me, Abby, and Ollie did a commentary for the original 1933 Invisible Man. And I remembered that this existed, and I was curious because all I could remember is the Invisible Man blows some bubble gum, and that was one of the things they did as a gag, and there's nothing else I could remember. So I thought, let's check it out on Spoiler Filled.
Funnily enough, that happens within like the first 30 seconds of the film,
It
so you
is.
really didn't remember anything of consequence.
I think I remember the re 90s voiceover trailer more than anything else. I think it was on a lot of VHS copies before films that I had that weren't the Invisible Man memoirs thing.
Okay.
So, but before we go on, Abby, can you give the listener the details of who done this film for the movie screens?
Yes, which I can.
Thank you.
Yes, this week we're looking at Memoirs of an Invisible Man. It was directed by John Carpenter, written by H.F. Saint, who wrote the book, Robert Collector, and it stars Chevy Chase, Daryl Hannah, and Sam Neill. Did I mention it was from 1992?
You have now.
Okay.
Yeah.
The one thing that stands out about that, John Carpenter.
Yeah.
I found out a thing about John Carpenter's billing, actually.
Go on.
That if something is called John Carpenter's something, 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 it means that he had directorial control and that he's willing to put his name to it properly. If it doesn't say John Carpenter anywhere, it means that there was too much interference and he doesn't really want to know it.
That makes sense.
Also,
Most of his good films are John Carpenter's The Thing, for example. But no, what stands out for me is just I've seen this film a lot of times, and it just does not have his stamp on it at all.
I guess he was known for pioneering practical effects, and it has those, but usually his pioneering practical effects were horrible, creepy monster things. And this is more, how can we do something to convey that the guy's invisible or whatever? So that's a slightly, different remit, so it doesn't smell of Carpenter.
No.
Even like because it's a comedy, and it's of like because some of his films are very funny, but this is a proper, this is a comedy idea, isn't it?
Well, you'd think that, wouldn't you, coming into the film? And for a while it kind of is, but then there are so many elements and different kind of genres going on in this film that I don't really know what to make of it.
Yeah, you just don't know what to think a lot of the time.
Because you think you know, kind of the idea of the Invisible Man is an obvious comedy, I guess. Because of all like the visual gags you can do and whatnot with an invisible man. And you kind of I was going into this thinking, all out comedy. Because even though I've seen this film like loads of times in the past, all I seem to remember recall are the comedy moments. So coming back and watching it this time, I was so surprised with all of the stuff it just keeps throwing at you. Like, it's a thriller, it's a romance, it's a weird artsy piece about loneliness. I
Kind
mean,
of an action movie at times.
yeah. And there's just like so much going on. I kind of wish it focused more on the comedy.
Yeah, it should be a comedy sci-fi, not a comedy. We're going a few places with this. Yeah.
I just like I would have liked it. I think it could have gone in one of any number of directions, but he did need to pick a direction. You're absolutely right.
Had you seen it before, Abby?
Not properly, I don't think. There were some familiar parts to it, but I don't think I've seen it in its entirety.
See, the way you said it was just like, well, I saw it, but I was ordering a takeaway in a Chinese and waiting for my order to come, kind of. That's how I saw it, kind of way. But, yeah, like, it's sort of, it's about on TV. It's been about on TV, well,
oh, yeah. A bit. I've seen this, like, 10 times on, like, 10 o'clock at night on TV, loads of times.
After the whole Christmas holidays when ITV are running out of films they've bought. But, okay, well, what... We think there's a problem with it being a particular genre. What is the film basically about then, generally?
Well, I guess it's the just the... Chevy Chase's character, misplaced his name.
I believe his name is...
Let me start that again.
No, it's okay. I believe his name is Generic Businessman. Yes, that's it.
His name is Nick Holloway.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, Generic Businessman Nick Holloway, as you put it, is just kind of fooling around in life and not really, like, taking anything seriously. He's got, like, a high-flying job, which he... skirts through every day somehow.
He's in many ways like Nick Cage's character from Vampire's Kiss, which we recently did a show for. He just kind of is in a business job. We don't know why he's competent or how he got it, but he's just there in it. Chevy Chase doesn't become a vampire, but he does become invisible. That's the link, anyway. Back to what you were saying.
So, yeah, I guess he becomes involved in an accident in some sort of lab.
Yeah. This is the first point where I think we need to discuss. And it's there, how he became invisible idea. And it seems it is enough to explain it away with, he went to a conference where there's some sciencey boring stuff going on. He gets bored, lies down in a sauna for a bit. And someone...
Yeah, what was up with that? He just goes into someone's office and then there's a sauna.
Yeah, well,
and he just goes in.
You just wander about when you're... You don't need to watch a conference. You mainly go for the free lunch. That's what the board game Thebes has taught us, anyway. Well, for whatever reason, Chevy Chase is separated from the rest of the people who all exit once some coffee's been spilt on a keyboard that makes sparks fly... somehow makes electric-y magnetism turn everything invisible.
Yeah, it turned into a classic 50s sci-fi hood.
But shouldn't it just be mandrakes are chemical, therefore we don't have to worry about it? That's the kind of explanation I was expecting. Not they're working on magnets. Do we even know what it is they're trying to do with the science before it happens and goes wrong?
I know, but I guess it's the kind of... It's been updated, so... I guess it just... In the 80s and 90s, like, just bright lights and electricity are out doing potions and, like steaming liquids.
Yeah, if anything, it's like a public service announcement. Don't take your coffee anywhere near your computer, because if you spill it on your keyboard, you will turn your whole room and yourself invisible and possibly kill everyone. That's what it tells us. Like, that's what happens when science goes wrong. And so, you know, drink your coffee in the cafeteria, then go back to your keyboard. That's the message to take away. And I think they did a perfect job of that, because I'm never drinking coffee anywhere near my computer again.
Yeah.
You're doing that right now, aren't you?
How did you know?
Don't you learn
to be
anything?
To be fair, I don't think my wireless keyboard is going to cause some sort of weird electrical reaction and turn me visible. I mean, it's only attached to the PC.
Yeah, you have to remember that Anthony isn't in the 1980s.
Well, you're forgetting, Abby, it wasn't the 1980s, it was 1992, like you said at the start.
Oh, close enough. The 80s bled into the 90s a little.
It was still 80s science.
Just a moment, guys. I have a scientist and a barista, and we're going to have an experiment. Anyway, for whatever contrived reason, Chevy Chase in the building.
That's what it feels like. Just not in a bad way, but it's just like we have to get this out of the way. Just blow everything up and turn him invisible.
Yeah.
Done.
Look, we could even do a cool bit where some of the building is invisible and they... Like, it was quite an interesting visual. Like, I did like the seeing a big kind of splat invisible building where it wasn't all gone. It was just patchy and kind of like a...
I did really like that, actually.
Yeah, like, during this whole film, I think, like, the place where it succeeds the most is in the visual effects. Really kind of capturing, like, what it is to have an invisible man. I think we've skipped over it, but, like, right at the beginning, we have a scene where he's talking to a camera, beginning his memoirs, if you will. Mm. And, you know, he does some things with pencils, and then he starts chewing gum. And, like, just, you know, throughout the film, there's loads of things, like him eating or smoking. Just, and they're really kind of really good.
Yeah, I mean, there are some really good effects, some nice ideas, and I think it takes some of the old stuff they did in the 30s and some of the sequels to the original Invisible Man and go, how can we bring this up and make it better and, like, improve on things gone by? And it does do that a lot, and they're effective.
Mm.
Like, at the very first one, as you say, like, he kind of moves a pencil and, like, I don't know, like a sharpener or a rubber or something, or some kind of box. I don't know. Now I'm doubting the moment, but... And he blows some bubble gum to prove that he's the Invisible Man, right? And this is 1992, and he's filming himself to give his memoirs, right?
Mm.
Well, they did fake that. So that's not proof, is it? John Carpenter was able to, like, make bubble gum blow itself and have a pencil tap a box and, like, show there's no strings. So would you ever really believe... If it happened today, would you believe that footage proof of the Invisible Man was real? Or would you assume someone just CGI'd it?
Well, no, but there is a kind of unwritten rule in, like, film universes where the rules of films don't apply.
Right.
I don't know, I could put that better. Like, there's... In films... It's like films don't exist, if you know what I mean.
Actually, that's a really weird thing about films.
So, like, our perceptions of, like, the film universe don't exist within that universe.
Like, when there's a film about a ghost, they've never seen Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Even though everyone in the universe has seen Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. So, like, I don't know, there's a kind of unwritten rule here where... That, like, I don't know, it, like, it just doesn't exist. Like, faking it doesn't exist.
It's odd.
But no, you've noticed that before, guys. It's like, films can't exist in a world where films exist.
No one has that. No one has that good a recall of popular culture unless it's making a gag of it. Like, you know, films do reference films a lot, but generally speaking, people don't think of the movies because... They're in one, and that is true, I guess.
Hmm.
Whatever. It just seemed a bit, okay, you're going to film yourself even though you're invisible, but literally it's just going to be a guy, to an audience, it's going to be a chair talking. Like, I'd keep playing with stuff to kind of prove that you're still there. Like, obviously you can hear him, but yeah, I'd like, least, keep it up.
At least wear a hat or like a fake moustache or something.
Yeah. Do a few things, more than just... I just a moustache talking, that'd be great.
Saying that, I mean, like, probably most of the budget was all blown on that chewing gum.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, chewing gum's expensive in America, isn't it? That's what you're saying, right? Like $100 a piece. Like, you're right. It would be too much effort to keep showing off all the time, because they had to literally fake it. But, they do start with a memoir-y bit. It's not that consistent. It's not like we're always hearing his memoirs. It does come up occasionally, but most of the time it's just we're seeing it from his perspective, kind of. We're just seeing his experience for most of it. It's not that non-linear, really, and it's kind of straightforward after the point he introduces the idea.
Yes?
Yeah, there was much more than yes to say to that, was there? So, you know, do we want to talk about some of the other, like, interesting effects, or do we want to talk about the story some more?
well, I'm sure they'll come up in when needed. But just generally, like, there's good effects.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just thinking we were getting to the point where we're going to introduce, like, the main bad guy now.
Mm.
Yeah, because, you know, when a building becomes partly invisible, you call in the feds and they put a big police surround. You know, it makes sense. You want to cover it up and investigate what went wrong before the public gets hysterical. Fair enough. And they do that and they cut everyone's, like, basically all of the guys in, like, special, like, zip-up plasticky, what are they called, those things they wear? Like
hazmat suits.
Yeah, hazmat thingies. Start bumping into walls and looking for them and, like, looking for the invisible objects that they can't see. And our main villain turns up to be horrible and cover it all up and exploit the science, doesn't he?
Yes, Sam Neill, or David Jenkins, as he is in the film. So, yeah, he's Sam Neill playing just the general shady CIA agent, kind of doesn't care about the little man and is just all there to protect the government or whatever.
And to exploit science for his own evil means, or which we don't really establish as very much in particular.
He does a terrible job of acting casual all the time.
Ah, like in a sort of comedy way, though. Like he sounds like Pierce Brosnan, I reckon, throughout this. He just sounds like he's being Pierce Brosnan. But I know what you mean. You mean the way he's like, oh, we've got an invisible man. He's scared. He wants to run away. He doesn't know what's going on. He wants to be normal again because Chevy Chase finds out he's invisible and then is freaking out a bit. And the guy's like, you can trust me, even though I'm clearly not trustworthy at all, and I'm not conveying that by... Like, he's so obvious in his lies, isn't he?
He is. And I didn't find it amusing, unfortunately, even if it was intended as such.
No, I don't think it was intended to be amusing, per se.
He's just so openly villainous. He's just like, he says... He doesn't treat him as a human. He's just like, yeah, let's get into the lab. And like, he doesn't try at all to be like, listen, of course, he doesn't reassure Chevy Chase, say, it's going to be okay, we need to get you to a medical facility, we'll get you visible again, it's going to be okay, please come with us. You'll be a danger to yourself and others if you try and go anywhere else. And Chevy Chase would agree to that, I think, because I'd be scared if I was invisible and I didn't know why, I think. Wouldn't you guys? Is it scary to be invisible?
If I was Chevy Chase, yes.
That would be another... If you were Chevy Chase and you become invisible, I mean, it would be very confusing. But he does an awful job. And obviously Chevy Chase is like, wait a minute, you guys don't want to do this for my benefit. You're evil hazmat guys. And he has to run away and get into Japes. And he's kind of on the run for the whole movie from this guy who's a sort of two-dimensional government villain.
Yeah, he really has no other motivation other than must capture him to use as spy.
Yeah, or something. We'll come up with... We'll figure out some use for him once we've got him... Like, I don't know if they're going to, like, mind-wash him or something. It's something you'd want to investigate. Like, if that happened in real life, yes, of course, you'd want to do science experiments. Not unethical ones, necessarily. But you'd want to get to the bottom of it. Apparently keyboards, coffee, and magnets equal invisible, so couldn't we, you know, do something?
Yeah.
There's a character who comes up in this, and it's the scientist who is incidentally to blame for the science that went wrong. And the main reason I bring him up is because he is Bishop Brennan in Father Ted, the amazing sitcom Father Ted. He is the bad guy Bishop, and he's just the scientist in this, and he's a regular old man. But, guys, it's Bishop Brennan. No? No takers?
No, I know what you're talking about. It's just that was very obscure.
Oh, but come on, Father Ted is ace, and the guy's in it, the Lord.
Yeah, well,
it's awesome. I was geeking out. It just distracted
Well, he's me. Not in it. He's not in it that much. He's kind of killed off quite quickly.
Exactly.
He is.
What's weird?
I'm not sure why he's in this, to be honest.
Well, you need an actor to play a scientist. You just get a guy, didn't you, who's an actor.
No, but they didn't even really bother putting in a scientist.
They didn't really bother with his character. It's like, he did this incidentally, and it accidentally made someone invisible. He's found out, like, basically Chevy Chase contacts him and like dressed, he covers himself up in claws and looks like a kind of undercover Smurf, but tall and man-sized. And he's sort of covered up with his hoodie and stuff, and like glasses and goggles and all that. Like, and he meets Bishop Brennan, scientist man. And then because the scientist has seen or not seen the Invisible Man, they kill him off. They kill him off by what we assume is going to be forget everything you've seen serum, but then it turns up in the newspaper that he died. I don't really... They sort of suggested they were just going to, like, drug him so he doesn't remember that he, you know, knew about it. Did you guys make sense? Like, did that make sense?
I was slightly confused by that, actually. That they drug... I could have sworn they said that they were going to interrogate him.
They did. A bit. And then they injected him with anonymous liquid. And then there's a newspaper later that says he's dead. So and it's some kind of bizarre cover-up. And it's just like, there's no need to kill him. Like, there was no need to kill him anyway. There's no real... they could just keep him... Surely, it made no sense. There was lots of stuff that didn't make sense. There's no point banging on about this one. There's more to get to. I don't know. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, anyway. So like you say, like the CIA are kind of tracking him down. So they track him down to like obvious places, like his apartment. And like the gentleman's club he frequents from time to time. But we're kind of like missing... Like the secondary part of the story, which is his love relationship with Daryl Hannah, who plays Alice Munro.
And the mermaid in Splash.
Oh, yes.
What's the other terrible comedy rom-com thing she's in, like someone else's love interest?
Roxanne.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Mm. Well, we won't talk about those films. Not very good. But Daryl Hannah usually is the love interest of a comedian in a movie. That tends to be her thing. And I guess it's because she's sort of conventionally attractive and sort of just nice and innocent. She plays that kind of character a lot. And in this, she's normal, but a shade too innocent, naive, and... I think there's something weird about a woman who falls in love with Invisible Man. Like, in the bedroom, that has got to be the weirdest thing ever, hasn't it? Like, making love with the Invisible Man.
Yeah, and we know they do that. We haven't just brought that up because we're kinky.
Off camera, they do that. It would be the weirdest experience ever. You couldn't do that. It would be disturbing. I fret to even talk about it.
I don't think it'd be that bad.
But I mean,
people always do it with the lights off, right?
Yeah, but doing
no,
it...
No, but that's the thing. There's still a shadow of a person.
You would just look so odd.
I also think it would be incredibly inconvenient.
Inconvenient?
Because you couldn't anticipate what he's going to do.
That's true.
And that's important.
Your ticklish levels, at least, would go up tenfold, because you wouldn't know where they're going to do anything. You'd be like, sorry. I didn't know you were there. Oh. Like, it would be weird. It would be very weird. Visually and emotionally and physically weird.
And sort of... He got used to it, but to an extent, he won't know where he is either.
Yeah, because he can't, like, see his hands, and that means he can't, like, do simple tasks that he normally would. Like, I think they explain it with, like, he's trying to eat Chinese with chopsticks, and it's just like, oh, it's hard without seeing your hands. Hard anyway. But they explain that it's difficult not seeing your own body. Getting around is all the weirder for yourself.
Mm.
It's a weird affliction to have, and I just find it strange that she falls in love with him. I mean, she met him before he was invisible, in fairness. But I find her a very disconcerting woman if she's okay with Chevy Chase as an invisible man. He might be charming, but he's still invisible. It's still a massive problem.
I don't know, but there's a kind of mystery to it then, isn't there?
Yeah, like,
if you know what I mean.
When has he fallen asleep?
something very exotic about an invisible man.
Oh, yeah.
It's different. You know, it's exciting.
No one else is invisible, no.
So I don't, you know, I think I think she does what she's been paid for. So I think Daryl Hannah comes off pretty well in this film.
And she's there fundamentally to be a help to him. Because the thing with being invisible is, even though you can like get away and trick people and stuff, you need someone visible to do your, you know, bidding. Because it's, you know, it's hard to buy even a hot dog while you're invisible, isn't it? Like, you're going to have to rob everything. And you need, like, they address the issue of things being seen in your body when you eat them as well. And basically, if he has to starve to stay invisible or eat clear foods, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's little things like that which I was enjoying in the film. The points where it's clear that someone sat down and gone like, okay, let's think about this for a moment. Like, if you are invisible, like dot dot dot, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
When they're really kind of bringing out the ideas in The Invisible Man is when I'm like really enjoying the film.
Well, when me and Abby and Ollie did the commentary, we realised there are a lot of problems being invisible. Like the original 1933 one, you know, basically weather of any variety other than nice sunny day is a problem. Dust, you have to be really clean.
Freeze to death.
Yeah. And you'll just be seen. You'll get snow or rain on you. Like, you'll get dirt on you. You can be seen. Like, it's really hard to stay clean and invisible. And then if things go into you and they don't disappear, instantly you're not invisible anymore. So there's a lot of problems. They kind of avoided the getting dirty thing because it's lighthearted and we don't want to be here all day. So, but they did address, it was kind of a disturbing scene when he tries something and he kind of sees his own stomach with the liquid in and just reacts badly to it. It was an interesting effect and disturbing.
Yeah, but it's like stuff like that and like being in the rain, just like little moments like that that were the most interesting in the film.
Yeah, and they were all really good effects.
Which I would like to see a lot more of. Like, if this was more a slapstick comedy, say, there would be a lot more visual gags and a lot more thinking about what it would be like to be the Invisible Man.
Yeah.
But they just throw more romance in there.
That's the thing. You don't get it as much now because nobody knows how to write romance anymore. But I did used to hate it during that period of film where they would ruin a perfectly good film by shoehorning in romance.
Yeah, and just kind of making the film stop because of it.
Mm. Yeah, you've got enough going on. A relationship is not the thing you should be seeking, invisible. The stuff he does do, like going to a friend's summer house, that's wise. Figuring out what his limitations are. He kind of starts to learn how to be an invisible man and get, like, basically, he's got a plan where he can get by. He's going to work the stock markets. That way he can do it anonymously from, like, phone and computer. He's got somewhere to live. He's got somewhere, like, you know, he's got a little base to work from, and he's got a plan. He's getting clear foods, and he's got ideas on how to be seen when he needs to, like wearing makeup and putting on wigs and stuff. So, in a way, he starts to deal with it in a really practical way. I mean, he does still then go jogging in, like, you know, just a t-shirt and shorts and a headband, just, you know, for the effect to be funny, I guess.
And then draws attention to himself by saying hello to someone.
Yeah, but you need some downtime, and you can mess with people so easily. So, you know, like, he has some fun with like pizza delivery guys.
Well,
yeah,
but that's the thing. It's like, because it's a silly, it has these elements of silly slapstick comedy. It kind of meshes with the serious thriller elements where you're like, well, that doesn't really work if he's trying to stay. It's funny,
yeah,
but it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah. They do a lot of jokes as well that are the kind of reverse of not being able to see someone. So they don't have to do the effect because they do a lot of jokes where Chevy Chase stands there and no one sees him. Because some of his clothes are invisible, but some of the time, you know, they'll do like there's quite a funny joke where Mike McKean, I think, walks in on him and he's had to strip so he's not visible. And he's just standing there naked in the room, and obviously Mike McKean can't see him, even though the actor obviously can. Ha! Ah, that's amazing! What a good reaction.
Mike McKean, he did such a good job not seeing him.
Yeah. To ignore a naked Chevy Chase is not easy. And Mike McKean's like, I didn't see anything. Like, fair play to him. But, like, they do a lot of the joke where, we could see him, so it's extra funny that no one else can. Like, you know, and it works a lot of the time. The comedy throughout is creative, both for the physical, like, just the way it gets around it with effect, but also the when it's not doing effect, it's creative as well. Like, it does lots of jokes like that. And I like those. And like you say, it's like, oh, we're getting back to the scary he's-on-the-run thriller, where he suddenly is on the run and barges over old ladies and, like, is kind of mean. Like, it's just... The Invisible Man, the horror character, is a bit evil and doesn't really care about people. And obviously Chevy Chase does, but he's still kind of brutal when he just shoves people and, like, gets away without... Like, you know, he kind of... There's a lot of moments that are just a bit harsh, you know? And then the thriller part with, like, when the security... Like, the henchmen of the baddie are kind of lame, and they keep having funny moments too. Like, I remembering a bit where they're looking for him in a park or something, and one of the... They've all got these weird, ridiculous, huge goggle things to look for him, like, with thermovision or whatever. And there's just one guy checking out a woman who's doing aerobics in the park. And it's just like, he's just staring at her really close. And it's just like, what is this gag doing in there? isn't that a weird moment? Like, it's just there for no reason.
Yeah, when I watched it, I didn't know if that was like a sort of... By, when I say a time thing, I mean when it was made. Or if that's just like the sense of humour of John Carpenter? Or
Letching security guard everyone, lol. Like, anyway, oh, let's chase the Invisible Man. Oh no, his trousers have come off. Even though I'm wearing thermal goggles, I still can't catch up with him and see him. Even though I can probably see him with the goggles on, I guess he got away. Like, they're kind of derpy, foolish, like, CIA or whatever they are guys at times. Like, it never knows whether to make it intense or silly.
Hmm.
And the silly works, but they don't know that to just do comedy. Like, I don't know. It's weird.
Well, as with everything in film, Bin, it's the weird tone that goes through all of the films we ever do.
Yeah. The other thing is, the main character is essentially a rich businessman, and a lot of the main characters, or rather all of his friends who are in the story, are all kind of rich people as well. So there's not that, you know, when they're all just rich and haven't done anything, I don't know, it's just they're not very sympathetic. Like, his friends are not villains, but they're kind of, they don't like Chevy Chase that much because they talk about him, and Chevy Chase is obviously there eavesdropping without them knowing in the house. And Mike McKean's one of the friends. There's a female friend, but then there's the guy with the most incredible voice ever. Tell me, Anthony and Abby, did you like thought the guy with like the weird British voice was amazing, right?
Oh yes. Richard was his name, yeah. Right? Yeah, so he's like the love foil, I guess, that's supposed to come between Chevy Chase and Daryl Hannah.
Yeah.
Where he's trying to woo Daryl Hannah, but she's having none of it. But he's so ridiculously posh and smarmy that you just can't see anything happening with this guy.
Even when they're not doing comedy with him, his voice is just like... Like, it's just the weird... Like, can you have a go at his voice? I mean, are you any better? I can't think what he says. He just talks normally and it's just like, hello. Like, I don't know.
It is hard. It's just... stuff like, I don't know what you're doing over there.
it's really hard to do because he's got this deep, like, voice, and he's just kind of British and smarm and smug and kind of...
Yeah, so much smarm. It was kind of wonderful to watch in its own way.
Yeah, I just laughed when he spoke because it was just like a caricature voice. And I think it was not that far off his... I don't think he was doing a silly voice. I think he might just talk like that, and that's amazing. I can't believe he doesn't get more voiceover work with that voice. Maybe he does, I don't know. But, there's comedy to be had with when Chevy Chase's friends find out about him and stuff, and it kind of... They throw in that, like, okay, back to the relationship thing that Chevy Chase is developing with Daryl Hannah, and they just go, okay, now smarmy Richard guy is going to try and force himself on her in a kind of just kind of be arrogant and kind of try and seduce her, and then not listen to her saying no, and then getting thrown off by Chevy Chase and freaking out because, you know, he just flew up in the air for no reason. And it's just, what are you doing, film? Come on, what is this? What is this nonsense now? It just keeps throwing curveball after curveball of where it's going. It just seems to forget. And then it's about, okay, he can't live there anymore. So he goes to the house next door and he spies on them and continues living there in someone else's house now. And it's just like, what? You see, like you feel like you're treading water, film. Like, get back to doing the funny practical effects and stuff.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
That was the thing with his friends was, he needed Mike McKean, but he didn't need anyone else. So the rest of them were just so redundant.
Yeah, because Mike McKean, they establish him as an office friend. Like, Mike McKean meets him when he's invisible, and they establish them at the start, but... Mm. At the end of the film, when he needs someone who isn't Daryl Hannah because she's kidnapped by the government dudes, they need someone else to turn up and pretend to be the Invisible Man. So we have to talk about the scene at the end, right? Because that's what I'm building to. And it's such a weird scene for two reasons. One, weird Indian blackface from Chevy Chase and literally floating Indian face at some point. And the fact that he must have had the weirdest conversation ever to get Mike McKean to dress up in bandages and meet at a phone booth and say a very specific thing without really telling him why he's doing it. So that's the scene. Do you guys have any thoughts on it before I bring up any of my qualms?
First, I'll just mention that, yes, it's some slightly uncomfortable blackface going on. But I think... this may be one of the few films where it's actually part of the plot and makes sense. I don't know if that excuses it, but at least it kind of fits.
Well, not since Short Circuit 2 has there been such a dubious I don't know how to feel about a white guy being Indian. I guess it's okay because it's not racist really, but it is a bit... You disguised yourself that way because you couldn't have been any other type of cabbie that wouldn't be quite so weird. Like, he basically, like, the Invisible Man pretends to be a cabbie and does the classic, ha, you think I was over there? Turns out I was in the cab picking up the person all along. That feels like a movie trope, doesn't it? The, like, faking someone out and then you're the taxi driver thing happens in, like, so many films. I think the last thing I saw it in was like in The Long Good Friday, but it wasn't really the same. That wasn't like a comedy switcheroo. That was just the bad guys are driving the cab type thing, or chauffeur and driving. Anyway, that happens. Chevy Chase is an Indian cabbie for that scene. But also, Mike McKean had to dress up like, you know, a bandaged up invisible man so that he'd give the... So the government would basically arrest him by mistake. But Mike McKean doesn't seem to know the reason for it. He isn't in on it. He was just told something. Like, what was the conversation? That's all. How would it go? Abby, you be Mike McKean. I'll be Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
Ring, 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 ring.
Hello.
Hi. It's me, the Invisible Man. Was it even him? Was it Daryl Hannah? Maybe it was Daryl Hannah. Maybe I should be a woman. Hi, Mike. Can you do me a favour?
Is that you, Tom?
No.
Where have you been? Have you been in my house?
No. Never mind all that. I need you to put bandages on and then phone this number, and basically just stand there and don't know what's going on in a trench coat and hat with bandages and glasses. Can you do that?
Are you high?
Yeah, you're going to do it? Please do it. Thanks. It'll save Daryl Hannah's life. Please. Thanks. Bye. And then Mike McKean's like, I guess I'll go along with it all. That's the weird, like, I can't explain how he goes along with it without knowing the plan. But he basically gets, like, arrested, and they're like, oh, no, it wasn't him. I guess we should have checked. instead of just arresting him. Oh, just it's stupid, but it does give us a scene where an Indian man's face floats off with people chasing it, and then he's magically gets it like washed off with one quick like. There's like a like some water leaking somewhere, and the makeup is all washed off, and he's invisible again. And then they just have the climax. Like, the climax is essentially Chevy Chase is running away up a building. Classic. Always get away up, don't you? Go up when you want to get away. And he gets dust on him. And basically, he can pretend commit suicide by throwing his dust-covered jacket off a building. And that's enough to end the movie on, essentially. That's the weird ending, isn't it?
It is really weird because there's no tension whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because you kind of, you see him, like you see Chevy Chase's character. It's really hard talking about an Invisible Man film. There are so many words and sentences that can go wrong. But okay, you see Chevy Chase visibly holding out his jacket. The audience sees him doing it. So we know there's no peril. And as a climax, it just kind of fails.
Well, it's like, oh no, Chevy Chase is scared and cornered on this rooftop. If the evil government guy, you know, I don't know, like he obviously doesn't want to shoot him or him to die, because then they won't have a living invisible man, but he does want him. So basically, by tricking him and like throwing his coat off, which is covered in dust, the government agent guy assumes he's committed suicide, but he then falls off as well. It's not even like, oh, you haven't just tricked him. You've accidentally killed him because he's tried to grab you, and then he fell to his death trying to save you, essentially. Even if it was for selfish reasons, he did try and stop Chevy Chase jumping, and then he ended up killing himself. And it's just like, yeah, well, you know, he killed Bishop Brennan from earlier, so we don't care.
we don't care. I think that kind of sums it up a bit.
And then this. To escape the scene, I mean, he's invisible, so it should be easy. And yet, Daryl Hannah, who's at the crime scene, like, decides to lean on the invisible man's shoulder and hug him and walk off, like, clearly, like, leaning in on someone. And they just, I guess you can just leave a crime scene if there's a murder. No one's going to stop you and go, hang on, we want to question you. Just walk off into the night. It's fine. That's fine. Happy ending all round? Yeah, that's fine. He's skiing now. Look, he didn't even become visible at the end. He's just skiing. He can ski. I don't know what he was doing with the whole, and they lived happily ever after with him still invisible. They just went to a cold climate, so it's explicable he'd have clothes on everywhere. And he likes skiing. We said he likes skiing. Skiing. Happy. That's what they.
Yeah, the film wraps up very quickly after like that point, and it's just kind of, well, you. I don't feel like anything's resolved.
I like the idea that a comedy can end with the Invisible Man not becoming visible again, and them living happily ever after. But he's still invisible. Like that's kind of funny.
But it's not a comedy.
it's just so weird. Well, they kill a guy, so that kills the chance of it being funnier at the end. It's just kind of. Oh, that's it? Really? But, you know, there's more to it than that. They did build a romantic comedy a bit, because they have loads of scenes where, like, basically Daryl Hannah understands his condition and tries to help him. Like, they put makeup on him. They go out to dinner, and he looks like the most frightening, crazy man ever when he's, like, wearing a wig and goggles and those weird white plastic teeth. What did you guys make of the times they tried to be normal with Invisible Man?
The choices they made were still weird. Like, we need to cover his eyes. Consequently, I will find the biggest goggles possible for him to wear in a restaurant.
Not the, like, it might be difficult, though, Ab, to find the nice glasses that don't just cut, like, sunglasses that go to the sides are not that common, so.
Yeah, well, makeup can be applied to all of your head apart from your
Yeah, actual eyeballs.
Yeah.
And even then, he could maybe have put in contact lenses.
But I liked it was, they obviously wanted a cool like effect where they put the makeup on his face and it just levitates and we go, oh, that's weird looking. And it was kind of interesting seeing both sides of the makeup, like, and seeing through his head. That was cool.
Yeah, that was a really nice shot.
And it was a good idea to have the scene so that you could have a moment where if he washes any of the makeup off, he looks frighteningly weird and has a hole in his face suddenly. Like, so I get putting that in. I even kind of liked the joke of when they put the makeup on, he had kind of rosier cheeks that, like, they had to paint everything on his face, but he looked overly, like, rosy and odd. He wasn't just regular. They couldn't just show Chevy Chase as he is. They had to overemphasize his face. But, I mean, she did too good a job, if anything. Like, if you put makeup on an invisible man, he wouldn't look, like, exactly right. He would look terrifying and couldn't go in a restaurant, in my view. But, I don't know, I haven't done the science, so... I just think, no, don't try that. Can't bandages? Can't he be, like, I don't know, injured, burns victim, anything? Also, hang on, just the idea of, if you're invisible, can you have plastic surgery to be seen?
No, you'd just be able to see the stuff that they put on and in him.
He'd just be a hollow, like, balloon man.
Yes, but it's like, it's these kind of things that we're discussing about that I wanted to see in this film. More of just people sitting at a table going, do you know what? What if we were invisible and we needed to do this?
Yeah.
And then, you know, getting it down there in the script and getting something funny out of it.
Well,
but it's just too lacking.
Okay, I want to defend it a bit because there are some really funny bits that I was on board with. And one of the best bits is he's on the run at the start and he can't go anywhere because, like, cars can't see him, no one can see him, and he can't really do anything. So there's a drunk guy, like a drunk businessman, and Chevy Chase, you know, obviously not being seen, he knocks him out and then holds him up and tries to hail a cab and then talks for him because the guy's knocked out. He can be, like, his voice and grab his face and make his mouth move. And it was so funny just the way he, like, the cabbie stops and there's this guy who couldn't possibly be standing up sideways, but is somehow, like, talking and sort of having his face moved for him. And that worked. It was really funny. Just, I loved the scene in the cab where he was smushing his face and talking for him and, like, pretending to be sick so he could leave the cab. And, like, it must be so weird for that guy because he got drunk, hired a cab, then woke up somewhere else not knowing why. And he wouldn't have known anything. He'd just be like, oh, I was that drunk. I just turned up somewhere else randomly. And had to pay for a cab I didn't want.
But yeah, you're right. Like, that is one of the memorable bits because it is, like I said, it is both clearly someone sitting down thinking, how are we going to do this? And then thinking, how can we make it funny? And it really works in that scene. But there's just too little of it throughout the film.
And then,
for me, anyway.
And then, you know, you have to sit through switch-ups where it's like the tense thriller again. Like, Chevy Chase goes to the office of the evil government guy and he like sits in there for ages and then he accidentally makes a noise, like his foot clicks when he moves it, and they have like a kind of tense conversation and they kind of thrash out this thriller idea that it's one evil guy and one like victim, and then it goes back to comedy and has like quite a funny effect where Chevy Chase invisibly, like, he gets a gun that can be seen and he sort of escorts out the guy. So he sort of has his arm bent back and has a gun to his head, but it all looks like it's floating. Like, again, funny jokes. And it's just off the back of a really intense scene that should have been a bit more, like, in a thriller or something. But do you guys like the gun effect where he's sort of hobbling out with a gun to his head that's somehow levitating?
Not specifically that part, because it's kind of like, it did look a bit like, well, that's just a gun stuck to your head, isn't it? Mm. But what I did like was his performance in kind of portraying that he was, you know, being trussed up and led somewhere.
It was good.
He did do it really well, actually.
He really committed. It was like, it genuinely was like he was held hostage, not just he was walking out in a funny manner. You know, it was good. I liked, that was the one time where, what's the guy called?
Sam Neill.
Sam Neill did a genuinely good bit of, like, theatre performance. Like, he was kind of like, that's good. Well done. The rest of the time, you're just villain Pierce Brosnan voice, man. Like, I don't know. were there any other, like, notable bits we maybe should have mentioned, or have we covered the broad strokes of it, would you say?
Nothing comes to mind.
What about you, Abby?
No, I think we have covered it, really. Like, our problems with it are really specific. That they didn't choose what genre they were, and they didn't mess about with the concept enough. They had a really good concept, and they did think of some really good things, but they could have gone so much further.
They did plenty. Like, they did come up with some stuff that wasn't that much of a gag. It was just kind of interesting. Like, they have the levitating fawn, and that was really good because the levitating fawn is in the mirror, and we can see Chevy Chase holding the fawn, and it does mirror quite well. Like, they did a really good job of conveying that, and that was just something subtle to put in. Like, all the time, it does really nice effects when it has to, like levitating hats and just showing that there's someone invisible. So it did that. I don't think it was as empty as all that. I just think it was a bit all over the place, like rom-com, thriller, comedy, sci-fi. Like, we didn't know what the narrative should be, really. I think it had enough for me, anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like,
I think it's more a case of unfulfilled potential for me, which I know is never a way you should come into a film. Like, you can't judge it for what it's not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, there just was so many angles this could have gone, and I think it would have worked. Just my opinion, I think it would have worked better as an all-out comedy.
Yeah, like a sort of Airplane, we thought of as many jokes as we could with an Invisible Man premise. Like, just really...
Okay, maybe not that far, but yes.
I don't know, like, not like a sketch, not like an ongoing sketch, but like how it was, but maybe drop some of the, like, sillier, like, side story stuff. Like, I don't know. I don't think it felt... It wasn't a bad movie. It was just... it was just weird. It was just, like, just a bit off. It was, like, nice try, but... What? You didn't feel the right way about the characters when you were supposed to. Like, you didn't... Mm. They weren't sympathetic when they should have been. You weren't rooting for them when you maybe should. And you... Like, it had just... The baddies weren't bad enough. They were too silly to be bad. So then when you kill them, it's like, oh. Harsh? Shouldn't he just be arrested?
Like, I think, you know. Yeah. I think most of this film's problems are in the script. Because I can't really fault anything else. Like, the acting is perfectly fine. The effects, brilliant.
Yeah, they'd obviously got to a time where they do the effects, and even though, you know, you may question the cinema magic of it, you know it's not real, but it's convincing and you get it. It's not like, oh, look at that, that's clearly done with wires. It's like, there was none of that. It's just, it's at a level where the effects are good enough to be, you know, oh, I get it, he's invisible, I can see that, I'm not questioning it, and going with it. Like, you know, whereas the older ones, obviously, are they're really creative and they're really well done, but you can still, like, would it look like that? No, that's silly. Like, you know.
Yeah, there's always going to be an element. With a film like this, which is based on special effects, it's very special effects heavy, and the premise that he's an invisible man, a lot of the scenes, people will be over-scrutinizing them.
Like, it's like a magician's act, isn't it? It's like, oh, how did they do that? How did they do, like, the thing where he fills his lungs with smoke? Which is a nice reference to the older films that tried to do it as well. It seems the Invisible Man likes to smoke no matter what era it's in. But it's like, you could see that they would have used a double and green screen. Like, you know, maybe you're going to come into it like that, scrutinizing, going, visual effects beer are interesting. And
well, it's not you're coming in like that. It's just the very nature of the film. It's trying to trick you, so you're looking for the trick.
Mm.
And if it's not well done, like, it's quite distracting. But to be fair, in this film, that isn't an element. You're not going like, well, that's clearly just a phone on a string. They do it well enough that you're not distracted by it.
It is good. The John Carpenter tick, you can do Invisible Man effects, but a big X next to compelling narrative, like with logical story, like.
Oh well, like I said, like I can't really fault the direction of the film. I think it's all in the script, like the just characters. You don't really understand their motivation. Like just plot points that don't make any sense, or scenes that you don't give you the emotions that they're supposed to.
Actors who have voices. Sorry,
it is down to a director to fix some of that stuff. Yeah, he gets a script and that's the basis for it. But there are plenty of instances where a director's basically thrown out most of a script and made a really good film out of the stuff that it kept.
Yeah,
true, but if we go back to your original point, this is Memoirs of an Invisible Man, not John Carpenter's Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
That's true.
So, how much of a hand did he really have?
Good point.
Yeah, maybe we can't really apportion blame. We don't know who did what and why, and sometimes everyone can be doing a really like good job, and it still doesn't work just because you know the end product doesn't work out the way you maybe intended or whatever. But for whatever reason, it is a bit. It's just a bit flawed, and it's a shame. I think that's where we'd basically conclude in at the end, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, so we usually come up with some kind of rating system based on a kind of tenuous metaphor for what the film is. Invisible things.
It's an invisible Twinkie.
Go on.
Care to elaborate?
It could be an invisible anything. It doesn't matter.
I like a Twinkie. Like, it's an invisible Twinkie. Ooh, it's a soft, spongy, cream-filled dessert, but I can't see it, so I don't get to enjoy it. So, I don't know. Like, Abby, have you got any ideas? It's really hard to think of something that ties in with the film that can also simultaneously rate it. We really should just do. It's 10. It's 8 out of 10. You know,
no.
Like.
No.
What is it then?
I do have. It's invisible ink, but it's ink that's invisible from the beginning, so you don't know what you're writing as you're writing it.
Oh, that's good. So it's not it's not the Roger Rabbit disappearing, reappearing, or whatever. You know, it's invisible ink. But yeah, good luck knowing what it is. That you've written it down. You think it was good in your head, but then if you ever do get to see it again. I did not write that good a script. I've blurred most of my handwriting together, and here I've written over a line, and I don't know what it says. I guess I'll hand in the script anyway. Is that what you're going for? That kind of you couldn't
it's
possibly
sort of, yes.
You couldn't possibly do a good job if you had invisible ink. I think that works, you know, to some extent.
Yeah, definitely.
It is really awkward, invisible ink. You'd think it would be amazing and cool and a great way to pass by messages. But you'd be wrong. It would be difficult to use and problematic, just like the film. So, you know, I think that, you know, that does it for this episode, right, guys?
Yes.
So, we should say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Invisible out.